system from that storm is merging with a second system and will be bringing those heavy rains and thunderstorms to the deep south before moving up through the Carolinas tomorrow. A federal judge is stopping the Trump administration's efforts to withhold funding from sanctuary cities. U.S. District Court Judge Richard A. Jones ruling yesterday it's unconstitutional for the executive branch to withhold funds through an executive order. The president tried to withhold funds from Seattle and Portland, Oregon, because of their sanctuary city policies. Oh, and nobody won last night's Powerball drawing. The Saturday jackpot now about $750 million. This is USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good morning. Welcome to the Library Show, the early morning special edition. I'm Jennifer Winberry, and I am joined on the phone, I really hope, by the library marketing team at HarperCollins.
Hello.
You're there. Yay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So this is the second special book buzz we're doing, and I'm very pleased to have Virginia Laney and Chris with us. I'm kind of sad they didn't win the Powerball last night, but I'm glad they did, or else they wouldn't be here today.
We didn't say we didn't win.
Oh, nobody won.
Oh.
That's how I know you.
Well, we did.
But were you that dedicated to your job? So I'm really excited to have them there. You have some exciting news about the Great American Read, I hear.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just turn it over to you guys, and you said I could interrupt when I feel necessary.
Absolutely.
Okay. We are live on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. I am working on the streaming. Chris, if you're listening, please jump on any second. That would be awesome. Okay. Take it away.
Hi. And thank you for the share music, which we love, because, as you know, all things share are all things wonderful. And also, we are publishing Share's memoir in 2020. So we should be talking about it from now until the end of time. Well, we love Cher. There. Okay. We can turn her off now.
Goodbye, Cher. Okay, she's gone.
Good?
Good.
Okay.
All right.
So, shall we talk about the book?
Let's say who we are.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Hi. We're the Library and Marketing Department at HarperCollins. And we love talking to you guys, so thank you for inviting us to your airwaves. Virginia Stanley.
Hi, I'm Chris Connolly.
And I'm Lainey Bain.
Yay! We're hanging out at 195 Broadway, way downtown, and in our offices. And so we're going to talk to you about some books, books that are out, books that are about to come out. And, you know, just listen along, and if you have any questions at the end, let us know what they are. So, Lynn, you're going to start off, right?
I'm going to start us off. So the first book we're going to talk about is The 7 or 8 Deaths of Stella Fortuna by Juliet Grain. Juliet is the associate publisher at Soho Press, and she's also the curator of the Soho Crime Imprint. And this is a book we're so excited about because we have a program where our sales department votes on titles every season, and this is our lead read pick of summer 19. So this book is a family novel. It's about a Italian family over several generations, and it starts off with a narrator that we might not know, but we know she's part of a family, and she's looking back on her family and pinpointing two individuals, her grandmother and her aunt, her great aunt, and they have been really close their whole life, and then all of a sudden her grandmother has an accident and wakes up and they are estranged. She is fighting with her sister, and her sister doesn't know why. So the narrator takes us back on Stella Fortuna, the grandmother's life, and kind of gives a sweeping tale of everything that happened to her and maybe possibly explaining why she's mad at her sister. So Stella is different from birth. Her mother believes that she has been cursed or haunted, and she always escapes death narrowly. So she might have gotten oil on her hand and almost got burned to death, or she gets trampled by pigs. So, but she always lives, and it becomes like her justice, like that I defeated death on all of these times. So as Stella grows up in a little town in Italy, she, in the early 20th century, she picks olives, and she is with her family, and her mother is around, her father not so much. And she's going through all of these changes in life and these near-death experiences and really becoming the strong person that she will become as an adult. And then they immigrate to the United States, and they go through a lot there. She meets her father back in the States, and really all she wants is just to be an independent person, but everybody is pulling her into a life, a forced life of marriage or family that she doesn't want. But she really becomes strong. She saves money. She helps them buy a house when they want to squander all of their money away. It's really beautiful, but what's really special about this book is that it's based on Juliet's own grandmother. So she kind of got to editorialize her grandmother's life and figure out, because this did happen to her grandmother. She woke up and she was mad at her sister all of a sudden, and they were so close. They started having family get-togethers at two houses because of this rift. And so Juliet just wants to give a name to her grandmother's story, and it's really for immigrants, but also for women who have lived rightlessly throughout the ages. And I have a quote from Lisa C., who's the author of The Snowflower and The Secret Fan. She said, "Juliet Grimes has delved into the family secrets of an Italian-American family and the ways in which those secrets, as well as slights and injustices, can both cross oceans and trickle down through the generations. The quintessential American immigrant story feels important right now, and I highly recommend it." This is a special book. We're all really excited about it. Juliet's wonderful, but I was weeping at some of the points of this book because you get to know the character so much and you feel for her going through all of these struggles. I know Virginia really likes this book, too.
No, I don't. I love this book. Okay. I really can't say enough about this. I mean, Lainey just did an amazing job. And I don't know what to add to it other than to give you my emotional response, which is that I could not stop thinking about these characters and what was happening to them while I was not reading this book. Like, that doesn't happen to me that often, but this hooked me in. I don't know if it's a really brilliantly written book. This is a woman who, you know, as Lainey said, she's the associate publisher of Soho Press. She's so smart, and she's very gifted, and she has this beautiful story to tell. I mean, this is her family story cloaked in fiction, and it's just wonderful. You know, it's how many pages is it, Lainey? Like, four sentences? I think it says, well, whatever.
464.
Yeah, it's not little. it doesn't matter. You fly through it. And people I've given it to have said, we wept at the end. I'm so happy for her, and I'm so happy for us that we have this book. It's very, very special. It made me think about my own grandmother, who was 13 when she came here from Ireland by herself. Excuse me. It's a wonderful, smart, intelligent, moving read. You will not put it down. Okay.
And I don't know if you mentioned this, Lainey. Sorry if you did. We had the pleasure of watching Juliet give a presentation on the behind the book story and her upbringing, and It's actually available on our blog. So if you go to librarylovefest.com, you can watch a video of Juliet telling her story and kind of what inspired this book, and it's superb.
Yeah.
And there's great pictures that she took when she traveled back, and yeah, it's really, really, yeah.
I come from Calabria. I just got these fabulous photographs. They're not in the book, but they just, you know, librarians who had come to Harper to listen to us talk about books and to meet her told us later on that just flushed out the whole story for them. You know, these wonderful pictures that just informed you even more. So, again, go to Library Love Fest, check it out. She was very pregnant in this video. and it was the first thing that she'd done, the first time that she'd spoken publicly about the book.
Yeah.
So, Chris, let's talk about when we were on the train.
Oh, yeah, that was how new this all was. I was going to a presentation at Darien Library, and Juliet was actually presenting, because she is also for SoHo, and I happened to pull out the very, very early printed manuscript with the jacket treatment, and Juliet was sitting behind me, and she saw it for the very first time, and she absolutely freaked out, so excited, as are we, of course. Like, she's just so genuine, and it's really exciting.
I think
to get this
seeing her so pregnant, like, it's really nice, because this is preserving her family before her, and so now she's writing it all down. Her child will have it, too, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And I didn't mention, but the narrator really, because it's in this day and age, it can really comment on all of the, like, sexism, racism that was going on throughout Stella's life. So it's kind of like you're getting Juliet's commentary on her grandmother's life. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And, sorry, I was just going to say, so, and like Lainey mentioned, it's our lead read. And, you know, again, that's a program that the salespeople, people who love books at HarperCollins, the people who sell our books, and ourselves included, vote on these titles each season. And we really, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back, but we know great books, and this truly is. I mean, we have News of the World, Paulette Childs is a National Book Award finalist, The Nest, Cynthia Dia-Pris Sweeney, Anthony Horowitz, I think it was The Word is Murder. The list goes on and on. It's a really strong list. You can go out and find those books now, and I think that kind of gives you a hint of how significant this book is. It's really special. So,
and you do have a little bit of a wait. This one comes out in May of next year, but you're going to hear a lot about it, so we wanted to let you know.
And I just wanted to say a word about the lead reads and your general. These three are definitely tastemakers. If one of you says read a book, I read the book, and that's it, and it's fabulous. So you can absolutely trust their tastes. Okay.
Aww. Well,
we're blushing. You can't see us, but we're blushing.
Oh, my God. We're pinker than we usually are. but, yeah, that's, you know, those, as Chris was talking about the lead read, I mean, we look for books that we think are going to have a wide readership, you know, that lend themselves to that and that are, you know, just have a great story. So, anyway, that, you know, we could go on and on about this book, but trust us. The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna by Juliet Grahame is a book you do not want to miss. And you won't miss it because it's not out. You want to talk about just our new lead read book by Tara Conklin?
Oh, The Last Romantics. Yes. I don't know if it's on the list.
Is it?
But, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is, actually. So, yeah, absolutely. So, again, our more... So, again, it's not out yet. It's going to be coming in February, but Tara Conklin's The Last Romantics is our lead read for winter of 2019. She wrote The House Girl, which was a New York Times bestseller. That was historical fiction. With this new novel, it's more in the, I'd say, the territory of Anne Patchett, Commonwealth, or probably like The Nest, Cynthia Dia-Pris Sweeney, kind of right in between there. It's like, it's commercial, but it's literary, very smart and wise. And it's a family saga. Follows four siblings who grew up, and it's told through the voice of one specific sibling who's now a famous poet, and she's being interviewed, and she's describing kind of the inspiration behind one of her most famous poems, and she tells the story of this one fateful summer when all the siblings were young, And this summer, just there were a lot of momentous events that really kind of drew them closer together, closer than even like a normal sibling bond. And this summer kind of was the glue that kept them together, you know, moving forward into adulthood. But then, as they've grown, certain secrets about that summer come to the front, and things are discovered that test these relationships. So she's such a beautiful lyrical writer. It's a very nuanced look at sibling relationships, family, legacy, and how we see ourselves and our loved ones, and how certain truths can change that. It's a really exciting novel. It's available to read now as a galley for any librarians listening, but it's coming in February, so not too far off. And we're really excited about getting more eyes on that book as well. So
one of my favorite parts of the book is when she, as a kid, she writes like little poems, like little words she strings together, and they are, it's just like three words, but they capture everything she said in this chapter so well that it like elicits such a feeling. I don't know. That was my favorite part.
Yeah. So special book. So again, read. It's a stamp that we, it's a book that will move you. And again, it's commercial. It has wide appeal, but it also has a lot of power behind it. And it's I think, going to make the rounds, you know, with, when it comes to award time as well. So
good sibling book.
Yes.
If you like that kind of a thing, which, you know, I do. You know, it's, you'll have your Kleenex ready.
Yep.
Okay, so didn't mean to throw us off course, Chris, but I figured since we were talking about the lead reader, why not?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so the next book I'm going to talk about is The Boys in the Cave by Matt Gutman. This is deep inside the impossible rescue in Thailand. So there, you know, I think there are going to be a handful of books coming out about this. This is a drop-in title. It's going on sale November 13th. So this is about the kids that were stuck in the cave in Thailand, the soccer kids with their coach. And it's written by this wonderful reporter, ABC News chief correspondent Matt Gutman. He came into the office not that long ago, and I was really happy to meet him. He's very energetic and very, you know, he got there almost immediately when he got the word what was happening. So this is the story of what happened leading up to, and then the kids going into the cave, how they survived in the cave, and what was entailed in getting them out. I mean, he told us stories. We were all sitting around in this office, and he was telling us these stories that, honestly, it never occurred to me. You know, they said that they got them out. They gave them a little sedative and anti-anxiety thing to get them, you know, relaxed, to get them out of there. And that's one thing. But then to actually hear him talk about how they did this, and what happened, I mean, they were deep into this cave, so it took quite a while to get them out, and most of the time underwater, you know, so sometimes the sedatives wore off. What these divers went through, how they had to, like, hold these kids up because the water was, you know, all of a sudden the water was, you know, moving faster, and they had to hold their heads up above water. I don't know, you know, look, the most important thing, obviously, is that although there was one fatality, they were lucky. They were thinking, if we get one kid out, this will be great. They got them all out, as we all know, and it's amazing. This is a story that's just so compelling, that human element. And I know that Ellen DeGeneres had all the kids on a couple of, I don't know, last week or something, and they had an interpreter on. And they're just sweet kids that are sitting there, you know, thrust into the spotlight, because this was, for all the craziness that's going on in the world, everything kind of stopped for a second or two in the scheme of things, and everybody was glued to see what was going to happen. Were they going to get these boys out? And this is the story of how they did it. So as I say, he is a ABC News chief national correspondent. He is very plugged in. There's going to be a lot of online and broadcast coverage of this. He's going to be all over ABC. He's going to be on Good Morning America on November 9th, so you get to see him there, and World News Tonight on November 13th. He'll be on The View on the 16th, so he's very... he's a very engaging, he's a wonderful storyteller, this guy. You can find him, you know, just Google him. He's everywhere on TV. He's the host of Sea Rescue, this Saturday morning adventure series on ABC. So anyway, this is, you know, this is nuts and bolts. This is everything about what they did, warts and all, and a You Are There feeling. So that's The Boys in the Cave by Matt Gutman.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, they would have to give me a double dose, I think, to pull me out of there underwater.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's crazy. But they talk about, like, you know, they're holding, like, you know, the oxygen, and then they have to turn and give it to the kid, and they're cradling the kid, and it's very, very dramatic.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, and the point is not to be dramatic, because I don't think that's the respectful thing to do, to dramatize this any more than it needs to be, but it was that. You know, and I never knew, I didn't really think about it much.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he did a great job.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to be right back. You guys keep talking.
Okay. So, I have a new novel from Kate Quinn. If the name doesn't ring a bell, maybe the Alice Network does. That was a World War I, World War II historical fiction novel. Came out a couple years back. It's a paperback. It's a New York Times bestseller. Continues to sell and sell. It was a Reese Witherspoon Book Club pick, and just made all the best book of the year, best book by both NPR, just a really acclaimed book that I think surprised some people just with how well it was received and how people continue to just pick it up. It just, again, continues to sell. So this is Kate Quinn's follow-up, which people are very eager to read. And if anyone was worried about this isn't actually Kate's second book, but like as far as a sophomore slump or a follow-up to such a huge book, Kate knocks it out of the park. So this is, again, a World War II historical fiction novel that follows different viewpoints, which, and it also pulls from real historical fact, and I'll get to that in a second. But it follows Nina, who's this Russian female bomber pilot. She's part of this all-female Russian bomber pilot squad called the Night Witches, which, one, is just an awesome, super cool-sounding name, and two, actually existed. They're really revered in, Russian history, but they're not really known here in the U.S., but, yeah, they terrorized the Nazis during World War II. They were all, again, all-female. I just think it's such a cool piece of history. But Nina, in this story, is trying to track down the Huntress, who is this Nazi war criminal who's gone aground. She's in hiding, and Nina is obsessed with finding out, where did the Huntress go? She wants justice for her. This is a really, really bad person that she's trying to track down, and Nina's obsessed. And she teams up with this war journalist who's scarred by, you know, the atrocities of World War II, everything he's seen, and they are going to try to track down the Huntress. And it bounces forward in time slightly to post-World War II Boston, and you follow this young teenager who's a budding photographer, and her widowed father brings home a new woman into his life who he's engaged to. And this woman is very mysterious. She has somewhat of a German accent and is not very eager to talk about her past. Very strange. And so it kind of weaves these stories together, and it's so propulsive and just has that perfect pacing that the Alice Network did that I think just won over so many readers, and just great characters. I mean, that's kind of what gives any novel its weight, and for such a forward-moving, action-packed novel, the characters still just drive this novel home. So like I said, Kate knocks it out of the park. I have some great blurbs already. One from Jennifer Robson, who's the best-selling author of Goodnight from London. I'll be talking about a new novel from Jennifer a little later, actually. But she said, "The Huntress left me breathless with delight. Kate Quinn has created nothing less than a masterpiece of historical fiction." blurbs, you get a lot of blurbs. People don't call things masterpieces of any genre unless they mean it. I mean, that's putting a lot on the line, and I think that's completely just on the ball with this. So that's what Jennifer Robson says, which I think there's this great quote from Pam Jenoff, who wrote The Orphan's Tale, which is a New York Times bestseller. She says, Quinn deftly braids the stories of a female Russian bomber pilot, Nazi hunters, and a young Bostonian girl staring down evil in the most unthinkable of places. The result is a searing tale of predator and prey, transgression and redemption, and the immutable power of the truth, an utter triumph. Are your hairs standing on end yet?
Mine are.
Yeah, right. So, such a good novel. I know, Lainey, you read it as well.
I really loved it.
Yeah. So, did you read The Alice Network?
I did not, but this one, I just felt like it had something for everybody, which is really great.
Yeah.
Because it's got a few love stories, but it's also historical, and it's a little thrillery. It's got some twist, and then you have this mystery. It's really got everything.
Yeah. So this is coming February 26th, so again, a tad bit of a wait, but you can prep yourself if you haven't read The Alice Network yet. Run out to your local library. They should have a copy, or if it's waitlisted, go to your local bookstore. It's really just like a campus novel, and then it will get you really excited for this, The Huntress, coming February 26th.
Wait, did you mention the Facebook Live?
Oh, my gosh, no. And actually, there is a great Facebook Live. Kate was interviewed with, did an interview with her editor, and I highly recommend, it's on, we shared it on our Facebook page. I'll make sure it's on our blog as well, librarylovefest.com, but if you do go to our Facebook page, it's available there. And this is also going to be a great book club pick. I think both the Alice Network and this have a lot of different topics to kind of dive into if you're looking for a great book club read. I highly recommend getting to know Kate via this Facebook Live interview that she did, and you can watch the replay. Really, really interesting, especially with editors. I think they have, of course, aside from the author, the most, you know, most keen and in-depth insights possible into a novel or the whatever book they're working on. So, yeah, that's a great interview. Highly recommend. Thank you for reminding me, Virginia. So, yes.
Let's say, it's really wonderful. I mean, like Chris said, I mean, that, you know, that's a very unique relationship, and, you know, that's the ultimate trust between those two, an author and an editor. And so, anyway, it's really cool to get that perspective.
And if I can interrupt, we are live on Facebook now.
We are live on Facebook.
Thanks, Chris.
Great.
All right.
Okay, well, we're moving into the next book, which I know is a patented Jennifer Wenberry favorite, Marilla of Green Gables.
Yay!
Yay! So Marilla came out this week, this Tuesday, so that's exciting. This is a book by Sarah McCoy, and if you are like me and Anne of Green Gables is your favorite book, you are, one, a little bit scared because you love Anne so much and Marilla is very close to you, but also so excited to enter into the world again, and all of those fears go out the window when you read this book. It's so good. And Sarah did so much research. She went to Prince Edward Island for like a month and went and got to know Lucy Maud Montgomery's family. So she got to hear stories from them that even maybe people in books don't know. And it's just so delightful. You get to hear the backstory to some of the fun side stories in Anne of Green Gables. Really, we don't know much about Marilla's childhood. We know that she dated John Blythe, which is Gilbert's dad, but we don't really know what their fight was about. We don't know any of her origin story, nor Matthew's for that reason. So this really just dives into it and gives you the whole backstory. You find fun things like her amethyst brooch is in there, and you get to know where that came from. It's truly wonderful. It's for fans of, like, Caroline. It's the same thought behind it. And I did a great podcast interview with Sarah McCoy, and you can find that on SoundCloud under the Library Love Fest podcast. And I talked to her all things Marilla and all things Green Gables. So that's really cool to check out. Also, Sarah is coming in on Monday, and this coming Monday on the 29th, And we're going to do a Facebook Live with her from Book Studio 16 at 1:30. So be sure to tune in. Jennifer, do you have anything to add about this book?
Go get it. Go buy it. It's beautifully produced. Anybody who loved Anne of Green Gables, and you're right, I'm always kind of hesitant about like Caroline or books that kind of go beyond the story, but Sarah McCoy was really true to Anne of Green Gables, and I think Lucy Maud Montgomery would approve. And it was very cool to find out about Gilbert's history, and that was like my first love story, was Gilbert and Anne.
Oh. I love that world, so any chance to go back into it, it would have been fun, but this just blew it out of the water because she did such a good job doing it.
Yes.
And that's Marilla of Green Gables, and it is available now.
Mm. And we got a birthday cake.
Yeah. We celebrated Marilla's book birthday, and we got an ice cream cake and sang her happy birthday.
So you can send any image to Carvel. Well, you can do it for any like, what is that, Baskin Robbins or whatever. But Carvel is not far from Harper. So we did this once when we did a book club catalog. To celebrate the book club catalog, we sent the image off to Carvel, and they made it a cake just for us to eat it, which is hilarious. And so then we sent, Lainey sent the jacket of Marilla off to Carvella, and we had a cake
with candles included.
Yes, you can go see all of us sing, well, we didn't actually sing, we said happy birthday. And the editor is there blowing the candles out, which is really cute. It's on Library Lopez.
Yep. That cake disappeared quickly.
Yeah, it did.
It really did. It was.
And Chris does not mean that we ate it.
No.
Editorial took off of it. And I go, we'll take this to our floor. I'm like, what's that, that cake? So we got dipped out of ice cream cake.
You know, everybody reads Anne and they have such cute little foods, cordials, and little cakes. So we just celebrated with a cake.
Yeah. And then editorial saved us from ourselves.
True. Yes, that's true. They did. We're like, all right, never mind. It gets better for us. To not have
it was
a lot
of large cake.
They said that it had a lot of lard in it. And that has the crunchies. Oh my god, I want these right now. All right. Where are we at now, girl? Goodbye.
Jennifer Winberry's favorite.
Oh, Jennifer Winberry. Do you love Dakota Winters by Tom Barbash?
I love it so much. This is
love
New York
it so,
City.
So much.
I remember.
Yeah.
This
you
is,
remember?
Well, you know, like as a young teenager.
Yeah.
This is the grittiness I remember, the wanting to wander the streets. And I completely adore this book.
Well, yeah. You know, we have a lot of library love for this book. Jen Dayton from Darien Library, another huge fan of this book, talked about it on her video. She does her own video buzz, which you can check out on the Darien Library site. Anyway, this is a book by Tom Barbash, who, he in 2013 wrote a story collection called Stay Up With Me, which was, you know, just got a lot of wonderful, wonderful reviews and to great acclaim, and he's just a really smart writer. And the Dakota Winters is, set in 1979 in New York City in the building, the Dakota, and it is about a family whose last name is Winters, so it is the Dakota Winters. He knows of what he speaks because he grew up on the Upper West Side, not far from the Dakota, and he grew up in the 70s. And so he just draws this picture of this very complicated family living in this absolutely beautiful, storied building with, you know, very famous people sort of popping in and out of this story. But at the core of this book is the story about this family called the Winters, and the father, Buddy, is sort of like a Dick Cavett kind of I've always sort of compared him to Johnny Carson. It's more like Dick Cavett. You know, he had a talk show. And he had sort of a breakdown on air. And so when you first start the book, you are introduced to their 23-year-old son, Anton, who's back from the Peace Corps. he had this, he was very, very ill with malaria, so he comes back home to the Dakota. He grew up in this building, and there is Buddy sort of, you know, mending himself after having this breakdown. But as I say, he's this talk show host, and so, you know, there are luminaries, you know, that show up throughout this book. Ted Kennedy, Ted and Joan Kennedy, and this is all leading up to the assassination of John Lennon. So it's, you know, New York was wacky, it was gritty, it was not what it is now. And so the author really wanted to capture that moment in time and what was going on politically and socially and culturally in New York City. And he really captures it, as Jennifer, you can attest. So this is Buddy wants to get back on track, and he wants Anton to help him. And so this is the story of them and where their travels take them. And it's, so you're not always in the Dakota. It takes you to different parts of the country. And
you go on the boat with John Lennon.
Lake Placid and the Olympics and the Hollywood Hills and even the Bermuda Triangle. And John Lennon, they say, does make several appearances in this book as well. There's some quotes that I want to read to you just because I think that they position this book so well. Wally Lamb, who we adore, says, "If you were a fan of TV's Mad Men, specific to a time and place, but universal in its exploration of the themes of identity and human vulnerability, you might very well love this novel as much as I did." And I think that that's a perfect quote, because you don't need to have experienced any of this, and I think I think some of us relate to it that way, because like Jennifer, you are Jen Dayton, she did, I did, I get that, I remember it, but you don't have to. It can have nothing to do with your lifespan, but you could dive right into this and fall in love with this story and these characters and that time, and learn about the city and the people in it who are running it too. At that time. So I love that quote for that reason. Booklist also gave it a starred review and says it's punctuated by clever dialogue and crisp social critiques. It's incisive, funny, poignant portrait of talented people in a city in flux. Illuminates the risks of celebrity and the struggle to become one's true self. I could go on. We have pages of quotes about this book, but, it's starred Booklist review. It's just wonderful. It's a snapshot of New York City at a time of it was tumultuous and it was iconic and as I say, leading up to the assassination of John Lennon. So anyway, that's The Dakota Winters by Tom Barbash. Jen, you want to say anything about that?
No, I just also love Michael Chabon's quote on the cover: "Death." Funny, touching, and sharply observed. He's also another one of my favorite authors, so I've lost you. Okay, we have just lost Library Love Fest. If you guys could call me back, I will get you right back on the air. I'm going to do a couple commercials in the meantime. Get the commercials. We're back live with Library Love Fest. Are we?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
And this was the first technical difficulty that I didn't do.
Yeah. So you can blame Lainey for that, because our feedback is coming through. So I've been pushing the volume up and down, but I guess I was just done talking. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll get blamed for it.
So where we left off, Jen, was that I was asking you if you had anything to add.
Oh, and I was just saying that Michael Chabon gave it a good shout-out.
Yeah.
And I adore him as well, so.
Yeah.
And he's got a new book coming out. This isn't on your list, but in January, Bookends.
Yeah, yes, Alice.
And it's one of yours, so I can say it, talk
about
it.
Yeah. I love how you cited Michael Chabon and I cited Wally Lamb. I see where our love lies.
Yes, that's right.
Wally's my literary husband.
That's right. And don't tell Islet Waldman, but I have a thing for her husband.
Okay. So.
I think I'm up, right? Shall I? Okay. Great. All right. Let's see. I'm going to talk to you about a really great psychological thriller debut, Free Fall, by Jessica Barry.
Which also happens to be another Jennifer Winberry favorite.
We might have stacked the deck a little.
I think so.
Or are we just, our minds are
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I swear to God, we're not picking these books because you love them, but
There's a lot to love.
Yeah, Lainey says we are. Okay.
So, Lainey knows what she's saying.
I mean, we were going to talk about them anyway, but now we can put your seal of approval on them. Yes. We're going to get a JW seal of approval. Going to get a sticker with your name. Thumbs up.
This is with certain thrillers, there's always the... I want to hear my voice.
I want to hear what they're saying.
So this is a novel that you'll do like, okay, read the first 10 pages and see if you can put it down. It's a challenge that we've put out to people with this novel, and I think it's very much deserving. No one's been able to put this novel down because it starts off with a bang. The overall story about this is there's this young woman, she's married to a very kind of wealthy, powerful man, but the novel starts with this plane crash. This private plane crashes in the Colorado Rockies. There's only two people aboard, this young woman, Allison Carpenter, and her significant other. But only Allison survives. And you kind of do this, it's like moment by moment, you're seeing this through Allison's eyes, and she's surveying the scene. Like, she's, of course, completely, you know, end over end. She just survived a plane crash. It doesn't really happen very often. And she's trying to track down what supplies she needs. Is this man that she was with alive? What's going to happen with this plane? Is it about to explode? She's surveying her surroundings. Is it going to get cold? What does she need? Is she injured? And it's so propulsive and just like, you know, minute by minute, and you're just flipping pages, like wondering what's going to happen. And of course, what you're thinking is this woman, Allison, is going to prepare to be rescued. Like, that's, you know, she's getting ready to hunker down and wait for help to arrive. But instead, what happens is she sets off into the wilderness and is very eager to not be found. And then you flash to her mother, Maggie, who's living on the other side of the country. She's in Maine. And the police come with very bad news. They tell her that Allison was in a plane crash and she's presumed dead. And Maggie isn't buying it. She doesn't know why, but, you know, it's just a mother's intuition. And she's not buying it. But what you learn is Maggie and Allison are very much estranged. They have not been speaking. And Maggie doesn't really know her daughter that well at this point in their lives. But she kind of dives into Allison's life and discovers a lot of secrets that Allison was hiding. And what you really come to learn is Allison is carrying some very dangerous secrets that certain people will go to great lengths to ensure she does not let out. So it's great. So it's kind of a twofold story where you have Allison, the mystery of what she's hiding and who she's running from, and, you know, her effort to survive, but also the mystery of kind of like what happened between these two, this mother-daughter relationship that's very nuanced and just really well-written. And this is a debut, but it definitely doesn't read like one. So, Jennifer, I don't know if you have anything you want to say, what you felt about the novel, because we value your words above all else. So...
uh-huh. Okay. No, it was just.
I was being genuine.
Allison's mother, Maggie, is a former librarian,
and
so she spends a lot of time. Like she just can't. Even though she's been estranged from her daughter, she can't believe she's dead, and she kind of unravels part of the mystery too, just through her research, and that's how she learns about her daughter. And I thought that was very. It was an interesting way to frame it, how she learned about her daughter's last 2 years. And then just the way each chapter, Maggie told one, and then Allison told one. And part of the chapter was the what was happening right now, and then part went back to the relationship. So it was, like, very complicated in a good way.
In a good way,
yeah. For a debut, it was very sophisticated.
Yes.
How's that?
Sophisticated.
Is that
a
good
word?
That's
what we go for. Yeah, and it is just really well...
The structure was really...
Yeah. Well set up.
Yes.
And especially for a debut. So this is great for fans of Woman in the Window, of course, AJ Finn, Sunburn by Laura Lippman, The Perfect Mother by Amy Malloy. Just a really cool thriller. And again, it's coming January 8th, but once it comes out, pick it up at your library, your bookstore, give it 10 pages, and I dare you to put it back down. I'm not willing to put money on it because I don't have money, but I would dare you. It's really that good. So really excited to hear what people think about this one. That's Free Fall by Jessica Berry, coming January 8th. Who's next?
Out now.
No?
Goodbye. That is me. So this is Tom Rosenstiel's second book, which is coming out in February. His first book, Shining City, which came out in 2017, put him on the map. That was a political thriller about a fixer who was hired by the president to vet his nominee for Supreme Court. How life and art intermingle. So that put him on the map as far as his nonfiction. He has been on the map for quite some time. He is Tom Rosenstiel is the author of, as I say, Shining City. He's the executive director of the American Press Institute. He's written 7 books of nonfiction, and he's written about politics he's been in the world there, in the Washington world, for over 30 years. So he's written about politics and campaigns and technology and Congress and media, and he lectures on journalism, and so he's entrenched in this world. And so when he turned his eye to fiction in writing Shining City, everyone was very excited to see what he came up with. And of course, he knows of what he writes, and so that book was embraced so fully because it really rang true. So this next book also delivers a spot on. So this is sort of like the Benghazi attack. That's what happens. There's an American diplomatic complex in North Africa, and it's attacked. And of course, immediately everybody else goes on attack on the White House, and the White House is accused of incompetence and lots of wild conspiracy theories. And once again, the president turns to this character. So this is not so much a sequel, but a lot of the same characters that were in Shining City appear in The Good Lie. So I guess you could call it a sequel, but you don't need to have read the first one to read the second one. But I encourage you to do that because that one's available now, and you get a real taste for these two characters, the fixer and his partner. And so they're called in once again to sort of, figure out what's going on here, and which they do. They dive into this world of, national security and intelligence, and they're sort of trying to do this under the radar, but that doesn't happen because everybody knows about this attack, and as I say, conspiracy theories and accusations abound. That's the story. The White House is trying to prevent fallout for the president, and everybody's trying to sweep everything up, and it doesn't go so well. But this is, as I say, he knows of what he writes. He's a brilliant man, and I just love that he's turned his eye toward fiction because he can really tell a good tale, and because he's lived this life, and he knows what he speaks it comes through on the page. And as I say, you can tell that from the reviews for the first book, which were many. NPR named it a best book of 2017. Michael Connelly, I'm talking now about Shining City. Michael Connelly said it was amazing, pulses with momentum, a debut that will be remembered for years. It was very timely, and this is great for like Michael Connelly and Daniel Silva, Matthew Quirk. This is the readership that if they're looking for something like that, like those authors, then send them over to Tom Rosensteel, they won't be disappointed. So, The Good Lie by Tom Rosensteel coming out in February, but you can get Shining City now. What else do you want to know about?
I think it's you again.
I was reading this really cool interview about that he'd done with Tom Rosensteel, and they were asking him about how he got his start in his career and what he thought about the presidency now and how do you deal with facts. I don't see if I can find this. It's kind of interesting because he talks about how journalism you have to be on your toes, but there's a danger in being too much on your toes because you got to get it right. But you want to be first, and that's tricky. Anyway, if I find it later, I'll read it to you. But I just thought it just sounds so interesting. I'd love to meet him. Okay. The Quintland Sisters now for a very different book. So this is I don't know how many of you. Know anything about the Quinlan sisters. This is the Dionne Quintuplets. The book is called The Quinlan Sisters. This is the story of the Dionne Quintuplets, which was this crazy true story. This is historical fiction. That took place in Canada, 1934. And it's about this couple who already had five children, not well off. They were farmers, very hard scrabble. She gave birth to quintuplets. Now, this is 1934, and nobody knew anything about, what was to be delivered or how many. This is seen through the eyes, again, fictionalized, this woman who is 17 years old, and she is a midwife. And so she's telling the story, and she, she's just as surprised as they are when these little tiny babies come out, five of them, and then what happens to them from there, because that's only the beginning of a really strange story about these kids and what happened to them. Now, again, this is a family that this couple doesn't have much money. They are, they're struggling farmers. This is 1934. And now they have 10 kids. So the government decides to remove the babies from their parents, and they make them wards of the British king. And this midwife, who, again, is 17 years old, she signs on to be their nurse because she's attached to them. And she's worried for them because she can already see that they're going to end up, something's going to happen because they're taken from them and they're an oddity and they're objectified. And that's, in fact, what happens. They end up building this, and this really happened. I mean, that they built sort of this museum and this place where people could go and pay money to watch these kids behind glass. They're all dressed identically, and they're just playing. But they're making money off of these kids. And then it goes into what happens to them later on. It's beautifully researched. She really did her homework. If you go onto Edelweiss, there's a great behind the piece. It was a great interview that she does and talks about how she, how she came to even learn about this story because she hadn't known about it and then was just so compelled by the whole story that she wrote this historical fiction story about it. But you can see pictures of the quintuplets as they are older, and you can learn about what happens to them. Some, it's kind of sad. It is sad. Not kind of sad. It is sad. I think right now there are two left who are alive, but definitely check out the Q&A with her because she, as you say, she talks about, she was actually in a library and she stumbled across a book called 100 Photos That Changed Canada, and that included a picture of five identical toddlers. And she said that, she, you know, most of the other things in the book she had known about, but this was a head scratcher to her. And so that's what started her down the rabbit hole of writing this book. So really, it's informational, and she didn't want this story to go away. Like now, there's, you know, the museum is gone. There's barely a trace of any of this stuff, and that worries her because they were a real family, and these were real people, and they had hardships, physical and emotional. And their story needs to be told. So, and she tells it in the form of a historical fiction in The Quitman Sisters. That's by Shelley Wood, and that comes out in March.
Wow. I'm just imagining the Great Depression, and then you have five kids that come.
Right.
And you're, what do you do with them?
Right. It's unbelievable. We once, how much time do we have? 6 hours?
About an hour.
Well, we once had an editor, a wonderful, wonderful editor, executive editor at HarperCollins. His name was Larry Ashby, and he was a wonderful man. And he acquired, really, Simon Winchester was his author. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. But he also had a very fun side to him, and he liked sort of, you know, kind of funny and odd things, and he just had a very funny sense of humor. And he had a house up in Stuyvesant in New York. And that was a great big old Victorian, and so had a lot of bathrooms and stuff. You know, the kitchen had a fireplace; it was heaven. And one of his bathrooms on the main floor was dedicated to the Dion Quintuplets. So everything in the bathroom was Dion Quintuplets because that's what they had memorabilia. Like they sold memorabilia in the day, any way to make a buck off these five kids. And so it became a thing where people collected memorabilia about the quintuplets. And, of course, Larry Ashley was one of those people. You know, like, you know, towelettes and soaps and matchbooks and anything you could think of was in that bathroom. Anyway,
whatever worked.
There's my side note.
Did you see any of the other bathrooms? Were they as well?
Oh, there's a lot of taxidermy in that house.
Oh,
fabulous. Yeah, it was fabulous. It was a fabulous home. Fabulous home.
Okay, so the next book, bringing it back to a thriller, is No Exit by Taylor Adams. And actually, we were talking about the whole challenge. This one, we're doing a first chapter challenge. So can you get past it? We dare you to put it down. So in this story, Darby Thorne is a college student, and she's going back home to, through Colorado. She's her mom is sick, so she's going through this big blizzard, and when she gets kind of in the middle of it, she can't move anymore, and so she pulls off to a rest area, and then there's four strangers there. And as she's trying to get cell service, she doesn't want to talk to anyone, she just wants to get out of there, but she's stranded, and she goes outside, and in one of the vans of the strangers, she's not sure which, she sees that in the back there's a little girl who has been trapped in a cage. The little girl is alive, she's trying, and she decides she's going to get her out of there. And then she has to decide which of these four strangers are the most dangerous and know something about this. And it's chilling, like, not only that it's a blizzard and it's scary, like, hair raised, like, it was so cold. And it's also funny, which is really odd for a thriller. But Taylor has a really good sense of humor in the dark comedy. He has a really great behind the book on Edelweiss, for all the librarians out there. And just, like, he said he looked up how to shoot a nail gun through flesh on YouTube, and I think he's afraid he's on a list now. But it's really funny, and it's got several twists in it. You don't really see it coming, and the main character, Darby, she's not your usual hero. She's not someone who stands up and does something about injustice, but she's kind of the new hero for the 21st century. She's going to take this in her hands because it's such a bad wrong, and she's trying to fix it. Like I said, it's just, I hesitate to say funny because it's a thriller and it's really dark, but it does have that dark comedy in it that I actually really enjoyed. It's for fans of Paul Tremblay and Linwood Barclay. I have a quote, too, by A.J. Finn. What a Box of Tricks, this full-throttle thriller, dark and driving, rivals Agatha Christie for sheer ingenuity and James Patterson for flat-out speed, swift, sharp, and relentless. It's a good quote.
I was thinking about Agatha Christie when you were talking about
yeah.
it. It is a bit of a twist kind of a whodunit room mystery.
Yeah.
I always enjoy that, and I've read this, and it's really tightly written and propulsive, but... Yeah, it's within, I like when authors, especially with the debut, you put yourself in it, within the confines of a certain story structure, and then how do you play on that? And he yeah. definitely does a really great job of taking that locked room mystery and then
kind
doing
of
something
like,
really interesting and unique and modern with it. So.
Kind of like And Then There Were None. Like, there's only a certain amount of people at the place, and so you kind of take it off in your brain. Who could possibly be there, who was around, and then I had to go back. After I figured it out, I had to go back and say, oh, I missed that completely. So,
yeah.
That's No Exit by Taylor Adams, and it's out in January.